In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's all true. Let's welcome all in. Monday afternoon, time to talk movies. Alan Adams joins us right here in studio. Is it the highlight of the week? Well, I'm not going to say it isn't.
It's certainly the highlight of my week.
Oh, it's good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
How was your weekend?
It's good. It was good. Not super eventful. As part of my day job, I participated in my first University of Maine open house.
Oh.
I basically was there as set up, tear down, help, and moral support. But it was interesting. You know, it's always nice to see, you know, young people, you know, both excited for and nervous about their futures.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But you know, that was Saturday morning, and then after that, like I didn't really do much of anything this weekend. It was kind of nice.
Now, last I saw, you were actually leading Stella in Kibbles and Picks.
That's like to the point where it's such a rarity, and it's such it's like I haven't actually looked to confirm anything from this past week because I'm convinced that it's like, well, okay, this is obviously an aberration, a glitch in the matrix. It's going to get turned around and everything is going to be back as it should be. So I'm just going to savor this for as long as I possibly can.
Things can take a turn, you know?
I mean, I suppose it's possible, but I mean, a lot of things are possible, Rich. Doesn't mean they're going to happen.
Now, we didn't see you last week. We had our MASH special on, so that's why I felt been too long.
I was going to say, it's been a while, yeah. But the MASH episode was great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that was such a cool thing to be able for you guys to be able to do. Just indicative of the sort of radio that you're just not going to get anywhere else.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, today's a fine example too. Two movies. Could they be more different?
I would struggle to come up with a less likely double feature than Blonde and Bros. I will say I liked one of these movies very much and the other one not so much. I'll leave it to you to decide which one you want to hear about first.
Well, I think I know.
You probably do.
So let's go with Bros first.
Okay. So for those who are unaware, Bros is the new romantic comedy starring Billy Eichner, who co-wrote the script alongside Nicholas Stoller, who also directed the film. Nicholas Stoller, who's best known for Forgetting Sarah Marshall, The 5-Year Engagement. He did the Neighbors movies. Really gifted comedic filmmaker. Eichner, again, he co-wrote the script and stars in what is being billed as one of the first, if not the first, gay-led romantic comedies from a major studio. This one has the added caveat of being featuring all LGBTQ actors in these roles as opposed to straight people playing gay people, a truth that is made fun of several times over the course of Bros runtime. I'm a sucker for romantic comedies anyway, always have been. There was little doubt that I was going to enjoy this movie. But man, I gotta tell you, it's really good. Like it's really good. It's one of those things where like, you're always a little leery when you have a movie that's in this sort of, you know, air quotes first, you know, capital I important kind of circumstance. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're sort of, you're mainstreaming, something that hasn't necessarily spent a lot of time in the mainstream. Like you're reinventing. Reinventing is the wrong word because this is in many ways a very traditional romantic comedy. But by foregrounding LGBTQ characters, you're doing something that really has not been done before. And so you always worry that the message is going to sort of overpower the medium, which is, I mean, it's comedy. Like it's got to be funny. You got to laugh. Mm. And happily, there's plenty of that in this movie. The basic gist is Billy Eichner plays this guy Bobby. He's a very successful single gay man in New York City. He's entering his 40s. He's got a very successful podcast. He's just been named director of the soon to come National LGBTQ History Museum that will be set up in New York. Like, very successful professionally, has a lot of wonderful friends and colleagues, and has a very satisfying and happy life in that respect. However, in terms of romance, well, there isn't really much. Like, his quote unquote romantic interludes basically consist of joyless encounters on Grindr, and then walks around the city thinking about, well, was that really something that I wanted to do? And that's kind of he seems content with that life. That's the way he wants it. But then one night he goes out to the club with one of his friends. They're hanging out, and he catches sight of this guy, Aaron, played by Luke McFarlane. And Aaron is everything that Bobby ostensibly hates about gay male culture. He's in there with his trucker hat, no shirt, like super muscled, like word on the street is he's staggeringly boring. And so, like, this is not the sort of guy that he generally is drawn to. But over the course of the evening, they cross paths a couple of times, and it turns out that maybe Aaron's there's a little bit more going on there than just, tight jeans and muscles. Like, maybe there's a little something happening beneath the surface. So there's a little flirting, a little back and forth. But then Aaron sort of vanishes, and Bobby is left to wonder, well, why did that happen? And, that sort of starts to consume him a little bit. And then we start to see that both of these guys are dealing with some pretty significant insecurities that are sort of keeping them from developing the kind of relationship that maybe deep down, like, despite their protestations, they actually do want. But time goes by, we see them get closer, they start meeting each other's friends, like, Bobby meets his parent, meets Aaron's parents, all of these things. But as often happens in romantic comedies, there are obstacles, tensions build, issues arise, and we have these two people who clearly want to be with one another but aren't sure if they can make that work, if it's the way that, if it's the way things should be. And so we basically get to watch and see if they, if they can, like, we can all tell they belong together, but will they figure it out? That's the question.
Nice.
So, classic rom-com stuff. It just happens to feature two dudes as the romantic leads. It's ridiculously funny. I mean, it's super raunchy in places, which is unsurprising considering, like Nicholas Stoller made his bones with that sort of comedy. So it's it only makes sense that it would translate. And by treating this film like any other film of the genre, I think that's as big a step as anything. Mm. Honestly, like, it very quickly stops feeling like it's like, I mean, it's about gay relationships, but it's not beholden to gay relationships, right. If that makes sense.
Yep.
Which is great. It's incredibly coarse in places, but it's also wonderfully sweet. Like, anytime I get a movie that makes me spend the first hour and a half like laughing at off-color humor and ridiculous pop culture jokes and all this stuff, and then give me 15 minutes at the end where it's just like, oh, so you're gonna make me cry now, Billy Eichner? Super, yeah, that's great. I'm sniffling and all this. It was everything that I wanted it to be, and I wasn't necessarily sure it was going to be,
right?
Like, again, because I'm only vaguely familiar with Billy Eichner's work. Like, I've seen a few of the Billy on the Street segments, but that's about all I got.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't sure if he was going to be someone who could carry a movie.
Yeah.
But he really, really, does a wonderful job. The chemistry he has with Luke McFarlane is wonderful, both romantic and comedic. Like they very much click in those terms. And the supporting cast is just top to bottom stellar. Like, it's so funny because when you have a film that has a call sheet this long, you expect there to be weak links. Like, that's just the nature of the beast. But whether you're talking about, you know, like folks doing like from everything from, you know, significant roles, like the folks on the directorial board of the museum, or, you know, or Bobby's like close buddies, or you're talking about like basically extended cameos, like Bo and Yang comes in and throws 100 for like 5 minutes and then just leaves. You know, Deborah Messing shows up as Deborah Messing, which is hilarious. You know, just all these wonderful little pieces coming together and making something that was, I thought, just a phenomenal movie. And frankly, it sounds like almost criminally underseen this weekend. It doesn't shock me. I wish it did, but yeah. It doesn't. You know, Eichner went on Twitter and basically called it as he saw it, which I totally understand. I don't know that that was the right thing to do, but he did, and you know, he spoke his truth, and I admire that. Like, that's what this whole movie is about, is being true to oneself. And so yes, all I could say is, if you haven't seen it, please go see it. Like, it's really funny, it's really heartfelt, and it's a really well-made romantic comedy. And honestly, like, I mean, the studios just aren't giving us many of those anymore, so let's get out there and support it, so maybe we get some more down the road.
I asked this question, I guess I know the answer, but are there a significant number of people out there that won't see it because of the subject?
Yes. Yes, there are. They're out there on Twitter making sure that Billy Eichner knows it's not that your movie's gay, because, you know, like, listen to these movies, like, and then they just trot out the standard list. It's like, oh, what about Philadelphia? What about Brokeback Mountain? What about you know, The Crying Game? And it's like, and it's just all like Dallas Buyers Club. It's like, all these movies, first of all, have straight people playing gay people,
right?
And secondly, it's all bleak and tragic.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you, oh, so you want, you don't mind seeing a movie with a gay person in it as long as they suffer.
They have to suffer. We don't want to see them having fun and being in relationships.
Or being like just normal human beings.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what, that's, you know, so it's not our biases, like Billy Eichner. No, it's not about us. It's about, make a better movie, Billy. Like, yeah. That's, and it's just, it's stupid and frustrating. And, you know, it's just one of the many things that makes me just, you know, move away from Twitter in disgust.
Yeah,
happens on the regular.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown. This one's generated a lot of buzz, both positively and a whole lot of negative. Your thoughts on Blonde?
Oh my God, man. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I had steered pretty clear of the discourse. Like, I had heard a couple of things here and there about it, but I wanted to go in as clean as possible, because this movie is clearly intended as like an awards candidate. Like, that is the sort of movie that this is supposed to be. So I sit down, I'm like, okay, I'm pretty clear. Like, I know that, you know, like, I know that Ana de Armas is playing Marilyn Monroe, and she's you know, she's received some pretty good notices with regard to the quality of her performance, but that's about all I know going in. I sit down. First thing I see, runtime of 2 hours and 47 minutes.
Oy,
and I'm like, yikes. Okay. And then the movie starts. And we are plunged into a... So the filmmaker is Andrew Dominik, who's best known for doing... like, he's done a lot of music documentaries. He did one, I forget the name of it. He did a very good one about Nick Cave. A few years back, Nick Cave, who also did the music for this, for Blonde, one of Precious Few highlights, I might add. but yeah, it's, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, like, you know, I'm like, I can take or leave biopics. Like, it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, we've been getting these movies basically since there have been movies. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a lot of room, whether you're doing like the slice of life or, you know, the soup to nuts, like cradle to grave kind of thing, like either one of those, like, but beyond that, it's like, there's not a whole lot you can do with a biopic that to make things, you know, to carve new ground or whatever, blaze a new trail. Tell you what, man, Andrew Dominik, he's blazing a new trail. I don't know if it's a trail anyone wants to follow, but it is. It's one of those things that is clearly an effort to be provocative, whether we're talking about the aesthetic. It switches back and forth between, it's primarily in black and white, but there are numerous color sequences. There's a fairly regular shift in aspect ratio as far as like the filmmaking is concerned. There are significant bouts of surreality. There are some pretty graphic sex scenes. All of this stuff just sort of jumbled together with no real rhyme or reason to it. And I know I've kind of skipped over the plot because, well, it's Marilyn Monroe's life story. Like, you don't need me to tell you what happened. Like, she was a child of a mentally unstable mother. She wound up a ward of the state after mom went to was institutionalized. She grows up. She becomes a magazine pinup calendar girl, makes her way into the movies, does some stuff she's not super proud of to sort of get her foot in the door. And then we're off, and it's the stuff, you know, but it's rendered in a very, very different way. I suppose this is the point where I should mention, this is actually based on what do they call it? The fictional biography of Marilyn Monroe by Joyce Carol Oates.
Right.
And so obviously a lot of
liberties.
Yes. Yes. We'll say a lot of liberties are taken with Ms. Monroe's story. But you know, in the center of all this, of this just swirling morass of chaos and lunacy, you have this remarkably grounded performance from Ana de Armas. And it's just like, and she's like, I mean, she is playing the movie that she is in. There's no disputing that. You know, and so things get a little nuts in numerous places, but it always feels like it's coming from an actual, like, genuine place, which, when I consider what I'm watching, you know, this movie, like, Rich, there are multiple scenes with a talking fetus.
Mm.
This is not what you expect from a Marilyn Monroe biopic.
Right.
You know, there is a shockingly, almost disturbingly graphic moment involving Ms. Monroe and the president. No names.
Of course not.
Nope.
Who
could it possibly be? Mm. You know, as well as, you know, her previous, you know, her husband's the ex-athlete and the playwright.
The playwright. Yeah. Also not mentioned by name?
Not by name. Oh, nope.
Wow.
You know, but it's like, so you have this weird story where it's like, there's this extended period where she was apparently in some sort of polyamorous relationship with two Hollywood fail sons. Charlie Chaplin Jr. and Edward G. Robinson Jr.
Wow,
I don't know if that's real. It sounds like really made up, but who the heck knows?
Yeah.
So there's just all this, and it's just like it's like it feels like just stuff being thrown at the wall to see what sticks, and not a lot of it does.
Mm.
You know, and I mentioned you know, the ex-athlete, that would be Joe DiMaggio, played by Bobby Cannavale, who's very good. Doesn't get a ton to do, and you know, the Yankee Clipper does not, you know, it does not come off well in this film, which is probably unsurprising. And Adrian Brody plays the playwright Arthur Miller, and he's excellent. Like, he's really good, and he makes a very, very good Arthur Miller. You know, and then you've got all these folks existing on the periphery of her life and whatnot, but. Again, and like I said, the performances, like, actually generally are really pretty good. Like, De Armas is great, and everybody else is really at least solid. But when those performances are, like, encased within this just bizarre, like, it would be one thing, like, if it felt like a conscious choice was being made for any of these decisions, and it just doesn't. It just feels like the director just randomly at points is just like, all right, so okay, we need to go, we need to shift the aspect ratio here. Let's have the next 5 minutes be in color, and can we get the talking fetus back, please? Honestly, and Sheridan and I were talking about it, and we kind of arrived at. So take a Baz Luhrmann movie, remove all the musical numbers, the whimsy, and the joy. And you're kind of close to what this movie is.
Wow.
Like, it's just so, like, in so many ways, it's just so unrelentingly bleak. And I get it. Like, so much of Marilyn Monroe's life, like, a lot of sad things happened over the course of her life. She had a lot of struggles, for sure. But the sheer joylessness of the existence that she had as laid out by this movie, It's just hard to watch. And again, we're talking almost 3 hours of it. And, you know, there are little moments. Like, I got a few laughs. I probably wasn't supposed to laugh, but I definitely laughed at times. You know, and there were a couple of really interesting sort of visual choices. But there's so much noise that you just lose the signal. And, you know, so I really struggle to figure out how did they get here? Like, how did they land on this movie? It just really felt like there was no one there there's no one there to say no.
Right.
And so when there's no one there to say no, you get this big, shaggy, meandering thing where it's like, you know, you have, seemingly insignificant events that are, you know, we spend 15 minutes, you know, digging into, and then like huge aspects of her life are just blown by or glossed over. And it's just, and it, like I said, there just doesn't seem to be any sort of real pattern to it. And I don't understand. Again, I'm not a filmmaker. I'm sure there was something behind the decisions being made. I'll just be damned if I can figure out what it was. So yeah, the performances are excellent. But honestly, weighing all things, I think I'm glad I saw it. I cannot in good conscience recommend that anyone else. I can't tell anyone else to watch this movie because it is a long, difficult slog in so many ways that you already know the ending. And the ending is really sad. And so you just, and you don't have any fun along the way. So you add all this up and it's just like, I don't feel good telling anyone out there to waste 3 hours of, you know, waste is strong, but yeah. Look at the world around you. Like, who needs 3 hours of bummer in their life right now?
Right.
So yeah. Blonde, Ana de Armas, probably going to get an Oscar nomination and a deserved one, I would say. But yeah, I would. Unless you're really here for it, I would say give this one a pass.
All right. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, The Main Edge, talking movies on Pass the Popcorn.